everybody, and welcome back to Cereal from the Box.
My name's Marie.
And I'm Gianna.
And this is a podcast, period.
Yeah. That's all you gotta know. You don't need to know anything else. You're here. You're trapped.
Yeah.
You're trapped.
Can't click off now. Too late.
Okay. So before we get to our regularly scheduled programming, I have some really exciting news that I just learned.
Yes.
Guess who just got booked?
Hell yeah. Can you say what job you got booked for?
Yeah, it's a show at the Gateway Playhouse in Long Island. And it's really exciting. I think I was a last minute replacement though, because rehearsals start on Tuesday.
Oh my god.
I have to move out of my apartment. They're like moving me in a little hotel.
Really?
But now I need to tell all my bosses.
You're like, no more classes.
So can I read you this email?
Yeah.
It has a swing. So basically, mm-hmm. I'm not really sure what that is. But I think it's like that if someone gets COVID, I have to just go in for them.
Yeah.
It's like 99%. I think that's what my job is.
Swings cover multiple tracks too, right?
Yeah.
Good luck to your brain.
Yeah.
I don't know how anyone does it.
I'm actually pretty good at that. Like, I'm really good at remembering stuff.
That's awesome.
When I didn't teach it. But this email sounds good, because I'm scared that I'm going to get fired from my jobs.
Oh, no.
It says, because they just told me, and I was like, yeah, I'll give everyone advance notice if something happens.
Yes, you can't.
If I just learned.
Yeah.
So I said, hello, hope you are doing well. I'm writing to let you know I've been cast in a holiday production at the Gateway Plus as a last-minute replacement, and due to the rehearsal schedule, I may not be able to teach consistently between the weeks of November 29th and December 28th. I am happy to help find a sub on a week-by-week basis, as I don't know exactly which days I'll be called to rehearsal yet, or to find a sub to cover all weeks if you'd prefer. Just let me know. Thank you so much for understanding the short notice of all of this. I just found out about an hour ago, which is true. I just found out around 4:30 p.m. and have been trying to get the details so that I would be able to communicate that with you. I wasn't expecting this at all and don't want to complicate things for anyone, but need to take this opportunity as a performer, and I hope you can understand and support me in this decision. Yeah. Please let me know if there's anything I can do to make the next few weeks easier for you in terms of sending lesson plans, coordinating subs, etc. That's regards, Jana.
That's perfect.
Do you think it's good?
I do.
Because, like, they literally emailed me yesterday.
Yeah.
And we're like, hey, we saw you at this other audition. Would you maybe want to audition for this? And I was like, yeah. But I didn't know the rehearsal started on Tuesday. But, okay. What should my subject be?
My brain just went booked and busy. That's not at all what you should say.
Availability, December availability.
Yeah.
December conflict.
Yeah, conflict is good. December availability conflict, I think, would be better.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so do you know when the show dates are?
Yeah, they're the 16th. To the 28th, but there's no shows 24, 25, or 26.
Okay.
So I
gotta find a way to plan to see you. I will.
Well, I don't even know if I'll be in it. That's the thing.
Yeah, I don't know, because I feel like
I mean,
I don't know. Maybe I'm one, either just not that well versed in the theater world, or two, am mistaken. But I feel like sometimes there's swings that are just in ensemble. They just change what they're doing depending on what the needs of the show are.
Yeah. I don't know.
So, I guess we'll see.
I feel like
once you get into the rehearsal process, I'm sure you'll be able to figure out better.
Yeah.
And then you can.
Yeah. Because she was like, you're just called to the ensemble rehearsals, and we don't know exactly when they'll be yet.
Oh,
or should I say potential conflict?
No, because you're still going to have to rehearse. There's going to be a conflict either way.
But, like, how do I explain the last, like, do I have to put last minute in the subject line?
No.
No. Okay.
That's already explained in the email.
Oh, man. Okay. I'm scared.
It'll be okay. I think so.
Scarsdale. Okay. I think those are my one job I can't teach is on Monday nights, because Mondays I have off, apparently. Gotcha. Will I want to do that? No, but like I don't wanna.
Yeah.
Teaching pays more than this job, honestly.
But the resume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yay. Excitement.
I'm very excited.
Love this for you.
Okay.
I had a lot of positive feelings with all your like stuff going on the past couple weeks with auditions. So I was like, I know something's
going to happen. But this is not, this isn't even what I thought it was going to be.
But I feel like that's how it works. Like every performer on TikTok that I see, they're always like, it's just the random like happenstances. It's not even like you go through the audition process and you get it. It's like someone sees you here and then asks you to do this. And then all of a sudden you're in a show. It's like, whoa, crazy.
Okay, sent it.
Well, here we have the distraction of the podcast.
If I get an angry phone call during this, we may have to cut the podcast short. Or we could just have it on the air. That would be creative content.
Truly.
Anyways, okay, let's get back to the
meat. Yeah.
How are you, Marie?
I'm okay. I don't have anything interesting to say about my life. I feel like I've been very
Mom keeps asking about you.
Why? I love that.
She's like, what's Marie doing? She's like, is Marie okay? She's like, is Marie depressed? I'm like, Marie's not depressed. She's like, she's like, does she go out? Is she okay? I'm like, she's fine. I was like, leave her alone.
I love that she's concerned about me, but at the same time, where are her concerns coming from? Is it just because she doesn't see me out and about in the towns of Olney?
Because you're living in your parents' house, and none of us live around you anymore. So she's like wants to make sure you're not lonely. She's very concerned that you're lonely.
Oh, I appreciate her. Well, luckily I've got people here, and people that call me.
That's what I said. I was like, she has friends.
She's fine.
Too many. She's like, does she go out like to parties? I was like, no. And I was like, do I go out to parties? No. It's like nobody goes out to parties anymore. I'm like, that doesn't exist.
That's so 2015, Mom.
Literally, it is.
LOL. LOL. Okay. Let's jump into the serious stuff, I think. Because we actually chose like a kind of serious.
Yeah.
Deeper topic, if you will, for today.
We're deep.
So I kind of wanted to talk about. Well, okay, let me back up. I always have to preface what I'm going to say, so that's what I'm doing. Sorry if it's annoying. But my thought process is I feel like a lot of our episodes are based around, like, the eating disorder itself or our separate commentary on TikTok videos and the fat phobia of the world. But, you know, a lot of things come down to, like, our experience with the eating disorder, how we got through it. And it's more so focused on the, like, structural backbone, if you will. Like, the overcoming binging, how to cope with binging, working on restriction, experiences with orthorexia, et cetera, and kind of talking about the relationship to food and behaviors around food and body image and things like that. But as we mentioned before, and as most of you probably know, like eating disorders are mental illnesses for a reason. They're behaviors that we engage in most oftentimes to cope with things that are beneath the surface, right? So kind of given that context, I was thinking, what if we explore that a little bit more? So, you know, you're doing the work in your recovery to heal your relationship with food, to be eating enough, to improve your relationship with exercise, you're, you know, working on your body image, etc. But how are you working on your mental health in those ways that are kind of underlying the eating disorder, the core, like, traumas and cruxes of the matter, if you will. So for this episode specifically, we kind of wanted to focus on the idea of self-worth, because I think that definitely comes up a lot when we're talking about eating disorders, especially if you're kind of experiencing that alongside depression, right? So just have some prompts to kind of get us through today's episode. I definitely is not one of those episodes where I feel like spent a lot of time thinking about what to say beforehand, because I think it might just be a bit better to kind of reflect in this moment and see what we can, like, organically get out of it.
For sure.
Yeah. So I think kind of to start, if we just want to talk about how we even define self-worth, like, what is that?
I feel like I did not look this up in a dictionary, so maybe I should have.
What does it mean to you?
To me, it's
not
like
to Webster.
No, Mr. Merriam and Mr. Webster, get your book out of my ass and let me make my own definition. To me, I feel like it's how much do I value my life and what I bring to the world. In relation to those around me, you know what I mean? Like, not in comparison to the people around me, but in relation to the what's around me. Let's say for me personally, like, I am kind to the people around me. I can help others. I can smile at people and that will make them happy too. Like, you know, or not, it's not like, oh, she's better than me because she's more nice. Well, I'm also nice. Okay.
She's really nice, guys.
You know, like, I am smart. It's not like she is smarter or someone else is, like, I'm not seeing them being like, oh yeah, no, I'm also smart. That's like things that I know that I can do, that I'm good. That I can bring to the table. That's my self-worth. It's like, and I value how I value those things.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think when I was when I was writing down these prompt points, I was thinking about self-worth from the negative side of it. Like, when I've felt worthless, how was I defining that? So yours is really lovely, and I feel like that's what we should be working towards, or that's one way to maybe, like, think about building a positive sense of self-worth.
I mean, feel like that all the time. To be fair, I don't always feel like that. I'm obviously in a very good mood today. If you'd caught me, like, 2 hours ago, I was in a grumpy mood.
Yeah.
And then 1 hour ago, I got in a better mood because I went to the Goodwill bins, and that place just stresses me out. Goodwill. It's gross. It's gross, and there's never anything in my size. I said it. It's done.
Upsetting. Yeah, I mean, that's very valid. Yeah, I like the idea of, like, it's like yes and no. I feel like there's a double-edged sword. I feel like it can be, like, a very positive thing of, like, finding value in yourself versus in the way that you and your actions are aligning with your values. And it sounds like for you, that's in relation to other people. So, like, knowing that you're kind to others is something that you value. So when you are acting in accordance with those values, it kind of increases your sense of self-worth. The reason I said it's a double-edged sword, because, like, a lot of the examples that you were giving, like you were saying, was, like, in relation to other people. Yeah. And I think sometimes when we overemphasize, like, our worth is only in what we can do for others, as opposed to, like, intrinsic values of ourselves.
Those examples, but, like, I think there's other things about me that are good, that are just about me.
Yeah.
But just, like, I just meant more in the sense of, like, trying not to use my self-worth as a comparison. And those were just things I thought of.
Yeah.
Like, for example, like, I know that I'm good at dancing, mm-hmm. and that's a part of my self-worth. I also know, you know, that I'm a good person, I feel. but that has nothing to do with other people.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, you could... I used to, when I was in the dark days, be like, oh, she's better at dancing than me. She's a better person than I am. Or I know a lot of dancers that would be like, value their dance over their personality. And I'm like, you are a terrible person. You know who you are.
Yeah.
Anyways, that person knows who they are.
Called out right here, right now.
She should be.
Yeah. I think I really like the idea of like living by your values is something to help cultivate a sense of self-worth. I really like that. When I was thinking about defining self-worth, I also use the word value, but not in terms of like personal values. Again, like coming at it from like, am I a valuable, like, am I a commodity kind of? Am I valuable?
God.
Do other people view me
okay?
as valuable? No, I was not okay.
I view you as valuable.
Thank you.
You're worth more than $1 million.
Oh, thank you. For me, and this is not how I necessarily currently define, like, for me, my idea of self-worth or my feelings around self-worth have shifted very, like, dramatically over the course of my recovery. So the reason that I had that definition, I don't think that's something that I necessarily feel true now. I just know it was true of my past experience is, I think for me, the idea of feeling worthless or like the feelings of that were very much surrounded by this idea that I was like being used by other people,
mm-hmm.
or I felt like I was only good enough in order to, I don't know, like be around people only when they needed me to, you know, like be used as like a mental health support, but not in another capacity, or to be used like, at, like it's kind of sounds dumb as I'm trying to say it now, but like in high school, like giving other people like my homework so that they could, you know, copy off of it or whatnot.
No, that's
or, like helping
that's...
people in that capacity. Like it felt like if I was the only reason people wanted to be around me was so that they could use me for the things that I could provide them. Whether it was like something as like mundane as like homework to,
no, that's
like,
not dumb.
Any other form of like time and energy, right?
I don't think that's dumb at all.
Thank you. Yeah, it just like didn't feel like people were like friends with me or wanted to be around me for like me, my authentic self. It was for like what they could get out of me. So I think that's why I had such low self-worth,
right?
Is because it was placed entirely upon how I assumed other people viewed me and treated me.
No, you know? I totally understand that because I feel like I kind of, until like the last 2 or 3 years, like I was putting a lot of my self-worth in how I looked and how my like performing ability, because I didn't see myself as a person at some point. Because, and I was talking about this with somebody yesterday because you're talking about, you know, a mutual person we both knew and how this person is not good at being a person, because they were always treated as an object. They're like an older dancer who was never treated as a child or as a woman, but were always treated as a dancer and an object and something to manipulate. And they now don't know how to act like a person, how to have human feelings. And so we're talking about that and like how you have to understand that, it doesn't excuse, but you have to understand, right, that they have never been valued and never learned to value people as people.
Right.
So that's something in the past years that I've learned to value myself as a human and see beyond the more superficial or like performance aspects of myself and like be like, oh, there's other things that I bring to the world, and that has increased my self-worth a lot.
Right. Yeah, I like that. I think for me now, or as a part of like the treatment process, they were very much like, let's combat these feelings of worthlessness, right? And this was like in like group therapy kind of settings as well, right? So not, I mean, I couldn't tell you what I did in individual therapy for like the first year of my recovery. I have no memories. But they really were trying to hammer this idea of like self-worth is innate and not based on anything. And I think it kind of relates to what you're saying about like humanness and things like that. And the idea of being an object, like they kept trying to use this example of like, they were basically saying that, you know, all people have worth simply because they exist, right? Like it's just a part of them. I mean, I guess like if you want to kind of bring like a religious or spiritual aspect into it, it's kind of like the idea of like everyone has like a soul.
The Holy Spirit is within you and also within me.
That just made me think about like the holiday masses where like the priest decides to sing everything for some reason.
He's like, it's my time to shine.
Yeah, maybe just that.
And another, and the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah,
glory and honor is yours now and forever.
Amen.
Amen. And that's on Catholicism.
Catholicism, always. It always comes back full circle. Anyways, yes. So it's kind of like, you know, the idea of like, we all have a soul. So therefore, like there's inherent value.
Right.
To our lives or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so then they tried to like use this example of like, well, do you know what doesn't have worth or worth that is dependent? A table. Because if it breaks, you try to fix it or you replace it. It's disposable, right? I don't know if I liked their analogy. I really don't know if it's a helpful analogy.
That was not helpful.
But they were trying to say like, we're not the same. You're not the same as a table. The table's worth is like equivalent to the price tag and your ability to use it. And it is replaceable, but you as a person are not replaceable. So therefore you're worth
it.
I think like that's what they were trying to come from. I don't know. I mean, but regardless of their weird analogy and if it actually makes sense or not, or if someone, I mean, I know at the time we were all like, this is so dumb. And we tried to fight them tooth and nail. We were like, no, we are all worthless. We are like the table. We are disposable. I don't know. But I think now I do approach worth from that very neutral place. Neutrality is a big theme in my life, unintentionally. I just think that's like what's worked out for me. But I don't question my worth necessarily at this point, because I do on some level fundamentally believe that like everybody has worth. It's just like it's not up for question. So right. If I have low self-esteem, like that to me is separate from self-worth at this point, because like having a low self-esteem doesn't necessarily bring about feelings of worthlessness in the same way that it has like in the past.
Right.
So I think that's how my definition has changed, and I think like that's can be a good definition to strive towards, is like just knowing that everyone innately has self-worth regardless of who they are, what they do, how other people view them or treat them. It just is, it's there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I already talked a little bit about feeling worthless in my past and what that looked like. So G, did you have anything to share about where like feelings of worthlessness has stemmed from in your past?
I feel like that also talked about that.
Yeah, you
can
talk about it. I feel like performance.
But like, yeah, I just feel like because let me say this to preface. Mm-hmm. Like, grown up, I see that, you know, the dance studio where I was, and like, you know, there's just a lot of ignorance in the dance world. I feel about bodies, about what makes a good dancer, and generationally things are changing. So, and for my teachers I had growing up, I care about them to this day. And I say that knowing that they, you know, they did things that harmed me. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do it on purpose. Yeah. That they thought they were doing the right thing. And I still can care for them, but know that they did things that fucked me up. So going on from that, because I still do care about them. They're not bad people. They just didn't know better. Yeah, I mean, I felt that because my body was different. And again, I was never fat. I was never in a larger body. My body was just larger than the other people's. Mm-hmm. And not even by that much. You know what I mean? It was just different proportions.
Yeah, different like shape.
Because I am not skinny arm and legs and, you know, no booty. that was apparently big.
Yeah.
And so I was treated very differently because they felt that someone in a not conventionally ballerina body could not be a ballet dancer and didn't deserve to be treated the same way. So I feel like I thought that's how the rest of the world was. And I thought that that's how I would be viewed by everyone else in the world. And it translated to my view of myself. I felt that I couldn't be a good dancer. I wouldn't be good until or unless I had the body that they wanted. Alas, they were wrong.
As we've learned today, she is as booked we've learned up busy. Today.
Yes. Is it a ballet job? No.
No.
But that who cares? Who fucking cares, honestly? Like, I feel that since I've left that school, seen the world, and even in the world, I had to teach myself. I had to teach myself to be not fat phobic and deal with my internalized fat phobia due to that, because I was afraid of how I'd be treated if I allowed my body to change. And I feel like allowing my body to change and going like weight cycling through my early 20s like really taught me a lot. And I feel now that, you know, I find worth in myself and in others, not on their bodies. Like I feel like not only is my self-worth improved, but I also am less judgmental, and I'm continuing to work on that bias that was like ingrained in me, as I'm sure a lot of people and especially a lot of dancers can relate to.
Yeah. I think it sounds like for both of us, just the recovery process in and of itself, especially as it relates to like having to go through different body weights during that time, during the recovery process, that allowed us the opportunity to start challenging some of those notions, right, especially around like our physical appearance and mm-hmm. how that related to our self-worth. So like just by going through that process alone, mm-hmm. you're kind of working on your self-worth, at least in that
right. And even realizing that anywhere else in the world, kind of those standards don't apply. Because in some communities, in some ballet companies still, it is how much you're worth. Your body is your worth. And it shouldn't be the case. But unfortunately, it still is for a lot of dancers and a lot of companies out there. Mm-hmm. So you just have to realize, and this is just me preaching to people that already know, like you have to realize the world is not your dance studio or your company. The right. world is, there's a big world and there's lots of things you can do in it. And if people don't value you beyond your body, maybe you're in the wrong place. I don't know. Just, right. You don't want to be there anymore.
Maybe. Take it from us.
Yeah. Just, you know.
Yeah. I think as I'm trying to like come up with like, concrete tips as much as we can as non-professionals, just people with experiences, about like how to ways in which you might be able to start working and on improving your self-worth and combating like feelings of worthlessness. I think between what you just said and what you said at the beginning around values, being able to diversify, if you will, your identity.
Yeah.
Because I think even for the non-dancers listening,
you can't just be one thing.
Right. There's always something, whether it's academics, whether it's a label that other people have put on you, whether it's your parents or friends, or just a role, quote unquote, that you've grown into.
Or like, even if you're like blonde and you're like, I'm the blonde, okay?
Right.
But you've been dyeing your hair because your hair got darker. You're okay.
Yeah. I just think like when there's too much emphasis on one part of you, especially when that thing that you're placing emphasis on is performance based
or even
or subjective. Subjective. Because
some people, like, for example, I've read a lot of kind of stories of people that part of what kind of spurred their eating disorder, and like, you know, if you maybe skip the next minute or so, if that might be a little tricky for you. Like, if you were always in a small body, if you were like very small as a child, and then in puberty you start to change a lot, and people and you're like, but I was always the small one, and so you have to let those things go because you're a human and constantly evolving and changing.
Right.
Exactly. You know, you're always going to change, and who you and the people that are around you, the people that are observing you and who also should value you as much as you value yourself, those people are not going to care if you change. If they really love you and you're just changing naturally, you know, they should still love you.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. I think, again, whatever it is that you're placing that extra stock into or most of your identity in, that's likely a source of insecurity at the same time, right? And kind of what cultivates those or can cultivate those feelings of worthlessness, because especially for most of us with the eating disorder personality type, there's the perfectionistic like tendencies, and like you were just saying, like everything in life is so variable, and especially when you like, you know, when you're trying to like break away from comparing yourself to people all the time, that makes it difficult too. I feel like maybe that's some of where my worthlessness stemmed from. It was that kind of comparison that like, oh, all these people are X, Y, and Z, but I'm not that. And maybe that's why people are reacting to me in this kind of way. And then that kind of cultivates that feeling. So the more that you can just explore your identity and find aspects of yourself outside of what you've primarily held as your core piece of identity, and whether that's just kind of connecting with that and acknowledging that those parts of you exist, or if that's coming into community with other people with shared identities in order to kind of foster positive feelings around that, or I don't know, I think like even just like exploring your values is a part of figuring out your identity and being able to live by your values, as you were saying, Gianna, like helps, you know, instill positive feelings, you know, because you're, you know, living in sync with yourself.
Yeah, something else that I was thinking of, like, you know, advice for people to increase your self-worth. And I think that's so dumb. I was reading a book, and the character was in like inpatient therapy, and his therapist was like, I need you to write down all the things that you're good at, because a lot of times, especially like you're saying, the perfectionist type, like you could be good at something, but because you're not perfect at it, you will tell yourself you're bad.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's what I would do a lot.
Right.
You know,
I'm so resistant to, if a therapist told me to do that, maybe it's just because I'm a really bad patient. It's so hard. I'm like, I'm not good at anything.
But like some like,
and they'll be like, for example, you're good at X, Y, and Z. I'm like, here's 100 reasons why not. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know. Some people are really into the whole journaling. That's really hard for me. I hate journaling, but I think it's because of other things in my life. Like I can't do it every day. And then I feel bad about myself when I forget to do it or don't want to. Anyways.
Yeah.
If you like to journal and stuff, I feel like that might be a good prompt for you one day. If you're feeling really low, like, what are things that, you know, maybe you could think about? What are things I'm good at doing? Mm-hmm. What are things that people have complimented me on? Mm-hmm. What are some things I really enjoy? Because, like, you don't have to be good at something for you to, like, kind of use that as a label. For example, I am not good at swimming. I am so slow. I always get water in my nostrils, but I really like it. So when people are like, oh, what do you like? What's something? I'm like, I like to swim. I'm a swimmer. They're like, are you good at it? No. But like, what are some things you really love to do? Because you also be a hobby swimmer. Or like, I teach a lot of adult dancers, like their moms, and they used to dance, and they're like, oh, not, I'm an adult ballet dancer. Like, that's part of who they are. It's part of who you are. Even if you're not the best at it, it's part of you because you love it.
Yeah, that's so true. Don't discount you can think about your those hobbies. Things too. Yeah, that makes me think of, and I probably said this before, and I hope I'm recounting it accurately, because the more time passes, the more I forget everything I've ever been told. But in treatment, they categorize self-esteem into three different categories: self-efficacy, self-respect, and self-worth. That's where the whole table analogy came in. But I think like a lot of what you've talked about is the self-efficacy, like believing that you can do things, that you are capable of things, that you're good at things. And they all kind of work in tandem if you kind of think about it as like different science beakers with different like levels of liquid in each of the beakers. So your like self-efficacy might be really high, your self-respect might be kind of like midway, and then your self-worth might be really low. But all of that together in one pot like builds up how much self-esteem you have, right?
Yeah.
And so when you can work on increasing, so maybe it's still difficult to believe like, oh, I have worth, right, as I am. If you can increase the amount of self-efficacy you have and the amount of self-respect that you're showing towards yourself, right? Taking care of yourself, feeding yourself, etc. Those are helping to kind of raise your overall self-esteem. And I feel like that has an inverse relationship on everything else within it. When you feel good about yourself overall, it's a lot easier to believe that you have worth as opposed to when your self-esteem is really low. So I think
a lot of it,
approaching the self-efficacy aspect might be a bit easier to do than working on the self-worth. So if you could kind of work on one, it's going to later on help you with the self-worth, I think.
I mean, that's personally, like, for me, that's what I think has really done it. I've never broken it down that way, but I mean, that sounds about right. One other thing, though, that I just thought of, because a lot of self-worth, unfortunately, is how we kind of, you know, how we feel we're treated by others, and the way that we are treated by others goes into our self-worth a lot, because we like absorb the energies of other people. I feel maybe surrounding yourself with people that make you feel like self-worthy, like people that value you enough that you believe you can start to believe that you have value, like for example, personal life for me. The past year also has been a lot of who are my friends, who are the people I want around me, whose attention or inattention is gonna like impact me, and just realizing, oh, like these are the people that want to be with you all the time. There has to be a reason. You're not fooling everybody around you,
right?
You can't. People aren't just gonna hang out with you because they need something from you, because at some point they're going to stop needing something from you. Right. So the people that really stick around, there has to be a reason.
Yeah.
And so you can kind of start to think, oh, maybe I am worth being around. And you have to be around yourself all the time anyway. Like I have to be around myself. Yeah. So I have to say, well, I guess there's something there.
Right. And here's where we enter the cheesy part of the podcast, where we talk about loving our authentic selves. Yeah.
You don't have to love it. You have to accept it. And then...
accept it, for sure. Love is sometimes a lofty goal, but a hopeful destination.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, how can I love other people? Like, if you can't, which is like, how can you love others if you can't love yourself? Love yourself. But like, it's true, because I feel like you know everything about yourself.
You know,
some parts I'm you not don't to, like.
Not to derail this entire conversation, but I think about quite often the idea of like, how can anyone, sometimes I feel like I don't know myself at all, and then that's fair. Confusing. But then at the same time, like, how can anyone ever actually know me? Because they're not with me 24/7 in the same way that I'm with myself. Right. And that makes me very confused.
But I feel like, okay, for me, I'm at the point in my relationship that I almost 99.9% of things that pop into my mind come out of my mouth. I don't know if that's a good thing. I feel like he knows me.
Yeah. Did that just scare you a little bit?
It didn't scare me, but I think it's a testament to how much he better love me, because he knows all the good and the bad. And if he's still here, that's a good thing for me. I hope I know him in the way that he knows me.
Yeah.
At this point, because you never know, you know. I'm very open book. So if you're my friend, if you're my real friend, you know everything about me, good and bad.
Right, that's true.
So
I think too,
Marie's like, yeah, I know too much about you.
I know everything I want to know, and I'm sure there's more I could know. Always.
No, you know, like, everything about me. Yeah. I'm very open with my close friends.
Yeah. I was thinking about the idea of not being black and white, basically.
Yeah.
Because what you just said about, like, recognizing that there's quote-unquote good things about you, quote-unquote bad things about you, like the good, bad, the ugly, whatever.
Yeah.
And being able to kind of accept all of that, like this idea that to have worth, you don't have to be a totally good person or a totally nice person, like, or a perfect
maybe
person.
Maybe I shouldn't have said good person. I think there's things that you're proud of about yourself and things that you might feel ashamed of.
Right.
About yourself.
Yeah, I don't mean to overemphasize like the idea of being like a good person. Maybe part of the reason I'm saying that is because, like, you know, when your thoughts go dark and then you're, you know, kind of going to those core beliefs or whatever, one of the roads that I can definitely go down is like, I'm no good at all. I'm a bad person kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I guess I was just kind of thinking specifically about this idea of like being a good person. Not because like you misspoke in any way, but just because that I think when we think about like people having worth, it again comes down to this idea of like being the best version of yourself, like the only the most perfect best version of you is worthy or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I just like think recognizing not being so black and white about over magnifying the not good things. Right. And being able to kind of recognize both.
Yeah. Acknowledging it and then letting it go.
Yeah. And then similarly, in terms of like the black and white thing, going back to like surrounding yourself with people that, you know, make you feel good and make you feel like seen as your authentic self and that you're there for, you know, contributing to everyone else's lives as they're contributing to yours. Recognizing if people treat you badly, that doesn't mean you're worthless. That means they're treating you badly. Right. Like, don't, like, try to avoid the black and white of taking all of the, and this is really hard when you're coming from a place of trauma, right? But just putting it out there as, like, a concept, like, taking ownership of other people's actions or having other people's actions say something about you is kind of a black and white route to go down. There needs to be some balance. Maybe, yes, there's something that their actions are saying about you, but more than likely, it is definitely saying something about their actions. And if their actions aren't nice to you, That's a problem. You know what I mean? And they need to take responsibility for that. Or you need to give them responsibility in your perception of the situation.
No, you just like made me think of exactly what I was talking about yesterday. You know, I always joked to people like, oh, I was the worst one at my dance studio. I was the worst one. Mm. That's why I never got cast in anything. I was the worst one. But if I really think about it, it's because I didn't get the same opportunities, right? So it doesn't say anything about me. It's not my fault that I didn't get the same opportunities. Maybe is it a little bit my fault that I was always late? Because I would forget things. Maybe. Because I had an undiagnosed neurodivergency. Yes, that is my fault. But it's not my fault that from looking at me, mm-hmm. I was treated differently.
Right.
You know, I just thought of this one time. And Marie, you've seen me in all my ups and downs of my body. In no time has it been appropriate for me to wear a size large of clothing.
Right.
Yet when I was in my smallest times, a costume was purchased for me in a size large in this place.
Unbelievable.
Was that my fault? No, it was not my fault.
Yeah.
And I blame myself being like, oh yeah, like maybe I just like been looking beefy lately. No, it's not my fault. You know, so don't take exactly what you're saying. Don't take the actions that other people like Marie. It's not your fault that people wanted your homework.
I was just too smart for them.
You were just very smart, and they were dumb or lazy, and they knew that you're kind.
Yeah,
they knew that you're kind. It's not your fault that you're kind. I mean, it is your fault that you're kind, but it's not your fault that you got taken advantage of. Right?
Yes, that's a good reframe.
It's not your fault to be taken advantage of.
Right. Yeah.
How would you know? How would you know? Exactly. You said you're being a good friend.
Right. So also, and to make this even broader, like, hyper individualism is a byproduct.
It's a product. Buy these bras. The newest product on the market. Hyper individual bras. One bra per boob.
One for each titty. Anyways.
Just like a little harness. Like goes on your shoulder.
One strap for this side. One strap for this side. Oh my god, I almost knocked my headphones off. Anyways. Yes. Byproduct of our capitalist society. So that's what they want you to do, and you should fight against the system. So if anything, fight against the system so you have better self-worth. It's an act of rebellion. No, okay, I do have one more, like, thought process for helping with self-worth. Okay, so I think, kind of as we've been saying, the voice that is critical that makes us feel like we're worthless oftentimes is not actually our own voice, right? It's the eating disorder voice. It's the depression. It's your best friend from 2 years ago. It's your mom. It's your dad. It's your ballet teacher.
It's your mom.
You know what I mean? So I think it's very important to get into the habit, whether you do this as like a journaling exercise or just like calling out in the moment when you're having these feelings and these thoughts, to label the thought as coming from whatever one of those voices that your low self-worth is coming from, right? Because in doing so, you're making it separate from you. You're saying that's not me that's thinking these things. These thoughts are here because of X, Y, and Z thing.
Right.
You know? Because, you know, this person said X, Y, and Z in childhood, and now it's carried over to look like this today. Or, you know, this is just a part of like the eating disorder, you know, or things like that. So when we can kind of make it ego dystonic and not truly like aligned with ourselves, we can kind of, I wrote this down yesterday, hold the dialectical, and I have to rethink of what my dialectical is. Kind of like, I guess the dialectical of I'm feeling worthless, or like this is the thought, And right, so, like, I know
separating. So I did this like this random therapy thing, and they like paid me to do it because it was like a study. And basically, yeah. we would do this thing where you have these feelings, and when you're having all these feelings and you're feeling like they're true, like things are true about yourself, like you're telling yourself facts, or you're making feelings facts. Mm. You have to close your eyes, and then you close your eyes, and you kind of have to pick a tree that you are, so you can pick whatever kind of tree you want to be, because trees are really big, but they're flexible and strong. And so, like, you close your eyes and you see things happening, and you have to distance. It was called distancing. There you go. Mm. You have to, like, distance yourself from them, and, like, you have to, you know, like, trees, a lot of storms and things happen to trees, but they don't fall down. Some trees mm-hmm. do, but not big ones. Mm-hmm. So you can't pick, like, a fucking weeping willow or something. It's flimsy as fuck. You have to pick, like, a redwood or, like, a big oak tree that mm-hmm. won't fall down, because the storms pass, winds, you can like see things happen, mm-hmm. but they go by. Feelings, birds come sit on you, those can be like your feelings, but they fly away, they go away, and you're still you.
Yeah,
you're big and strong tree.
Wow, what a great mindfulness kind of exercise.
It was really good. That was actually a good therapy time in my life.
Yeah.
But it was only like 3 months or something, but every few months I get they ask me a survey.
Yeah.
To do a survey, and then I get an Amazon gift card.
Love that.
I hope it goes on forever.
Yeah, an everlasting study. Yeah, no, I think that's like a perfect way to kind of like, through imagery, depict kind of what I'm talking about is like...
Yeah, that's what made me think
yeah,
of
it. Yeah, because you want the thoughts to be able to kind of, one, pass you by to hopefully mm-hmm. like, you know, allowing the feeling to pass with time. A bit quicker than when you hyperfixate on it. Mm-hmm. But two, to know that, like you were saying, like that your feeling is not true. There might be a reason for why the feeling's coming up, and it's fine to feel that feeling. But at the same time, knowing just because like you don't feel like you have worth in this moment, knowing that that's coming from a place outside of you, and the true authentic you understands that you have worth. Simply by being. Right. So I think, and then I think the reason I also wrote that down is because like, I know for me, and I think I said this like in our check-in, like a couple episodes ago or whatnot, like my self-esteem will just ebb and flow. Like
yeah.
sometimes like, I don't think about it. And then other times I'm like, and then crying for like a month straight. But anyways, like I think at those times, I know that just because I'm feeling that way, that it's not permanent, that mm-hmm. at some point my self-esteem is gonna go back to just being like whatever, I exist.
Yeah, you don't live in a monsoon. It's right. not always
it's not hurricane. Constant. And so when that comes in and I'm dealing like with self-worth, I guess I was thinking about it particularly in the context of depression, right? Because I feel right. like, you know, when you go through a depressive episode, like feelings of guilt intensify, feelings of worthlessness intensify, and to know that like the depressive episode, you know, for most people is an episode, you know, the fact that it might end and you'll be able to return to that baseline of feeling the worthless or of feeling worth that,
yeah,
you know, being able to recognize that in that moment, the thought is kind of outside of you. And so just because the thought is there doesn't make it, like you were saying, true.
Yeah.
Do we have other thoughts on worth?
Personally, I don't. Yeah. All I will say is that it will get better if you are willing to put the time into it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you recognize that this is a problem for you, like, or like, you know, finding somebody professional who can help guide you yeah. through these things. Like, for example, like the same therapy lady, she was so cool. I don't remember her name, but she was cool. She also did like, you know, like when you like tell yourself things that you wish someone told you when you were a kid. And it's really emotional. And it's really hard.
Yeah.
But like, because a lot of these self-worth things come from our childhood, teenage yeah. years, where we feel like we can't talk to anybody about it. Like your parents don't understand. Like, you take adults or people's words as the word of God or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're not. No one is, no one on the earth, but regardless of your beliefs of what's out there, no one on this earth is God. If one exists, right? You can believe mm-hmm. whatever you want. But you, a lot of times these words that we hear as children really hurt us. So like, what if someone had said something else to you? So that kind of thing. But just finding someone that can help you through it, or just devoting the time to yourself to work on it. Cause it makes your life a lot better when you don't just hate yourself all the time.
Yeah, definitely.
That's other thoughts?
No, I agree. I was thinking great. The same thing. I was like, we need a disclaimer saying, like, obviously everything that we shared is little tools
yeah,
to chip
yeah,
away
yeah.
at like a much bigger thing. And it always helps when you can get the professional
chip.
Help if it is accessible to you to kind of work on that mm-hmm. with another person and with a
witness.
If
not, you could like look it up on for free, like Google like prompts, like journal
oh,
prompts
yeah.
or
if
like
you're a journaler,
you could listen to meditation on YouTube.
Yeah, write yourself a little affirmation. Put it on your mirror.
I hate that though. That would get on my nerves. I'd be like, get mirror. Off. Anyway.
No. Yeah.
You could follow us on Instagram and ask us questions.
That you can.
Or give us episode suggestions.
You can email us at sirafromthebox@gmail.com. We've got
yes,
a couple people
baby.
Emailing us, so don't feel left out.
Can we read any emails in the air or no?
I'm going to go with no at the current point in time, but if they are interested in letting us read it.
Yeah, tell us we can read your things on the air. Yeah, baby. Follow me on Instagram at Gianna Bartolini and see what I'm up to. If I don't know.
Yeah.
Someone please tell me if a swing performs. Because I said yes to this contract fully. Like, I know what a swing is, but like, not really. So someone help me.
Yeah, you want to see cool dance photos? Because she just ran around the entire city.
Naked.
Of New York City.
Basically naked.
So many photos. Crazy.
This guy on the Brooklyn Bridge just covered his whole face with his hat so he could not look at me. I was like, dude, I'm wearing...
It's like, here's your privacy.
He literally, you guys can't see this, but like, look, like this is what happened. He was literally walking with his wife and then he goes.
Wait, was it when you were actually wearing clothes or when you were changing?
I was wearing a leotard. It was when I was taking the pictures.
Oh, never mind. I take it back. He thought.
Like, yes, my ass was a little bit out, but like not.
But it's. Leotard.
It's like
we've all
it's
seen
like a one-piece bathing suit. It was like a one-piece bathing suit, and it was conservative. Like you couldn't like my chest was fully covered, my booty was mostly covered. Like it's not like a G-string. Like it has a full butt. I just have stuff going on down there. Anyway.
Okay. Well, never mind. Fuck
those.
Him. Just kidding.
Yeah. Fuck him.
That was rude.
I hope he's okay though. I hope his wife was pleased.
I hope he's not scarred.
Jesus Christ. But you can follow me for that. You can just like email us anytime. And yeah, if you have any questions, let us know. Bye.
Bye-bye.